tournament, and you know, I just grew up there playing. You know, back then we didn't have any what would you call it, high school team games. We played till we were 15, and basically I learned how to play in the beer leagues with older men when I was 15 years old. I was pitching against guys that were 25, 30, 23 college guys and everything else, and I played for a team that my dad had played for when he was playing, called the Mohawks, and it was run by a man in Alice who was very well known. His name was Zeke Mora, and his legacy was he was a baseball player, a baseball man, a baseball coach. And fortunately for me, he asked me to go pitch one day on a Sunday afternoon in Alice, Texas, and there was no fence. There was cows in the pasture, and I walked down in my blue jeans and my tennis shoes, walked down from where I lived in the middle of summer, but I don't know how hot it was, and I'm walking in the middle of the pasture, and we're playing this team from Edinburgh, Texas, had college players on it. And I walk in there, and Mr. Mora told their guys that they asked who was pitching, and I was walking through the middle of the field, said, that little boy that's coming in there, and they kind of laughed. I beat them 1-0 through 9 innings. And, you know, and it was basically how I learned how to pitch.
You never played any high school ball?
No, I played high school ball, but we didn't have any organized. After 15, there was no organized baseball, like where you play with high school kids more.
Okay.
After that, you had to learn how to play somewhere else.
How did but the University of Texas found you?
Well, you know what happened was is my senior year, like I said, we won district, and right after district, something happened, and I took off, and I pitched a game, and we won 2-0, and then we ended up playing Austin McCallum in Austin, Texas. And we got rained out on Tuesday, and we had to go back on a Thursday on a little one of those yellow buses. And we drove our 4 hours to Austin in a little yellow bus, went up there and played Austin McCallum. And the guy who pitched again had a full ride to Texas, a good friend of mine now. And Coach Gustafson was there. Well, we beat him 1-0. I throw a one-hitter and strike out 15. And so we had to play him again on Saturday, and I pitched again on Saturday and beat him 7-1 and struck out 16. So I think that's where Gustafson saw me pitch, and all of a sudden the interest went up, and, you know, I won two more games, and then we lost. Our team lost 1-0 in the state semifinals. I threw a one-hitter, got beaten bottom of the seventh inning.
How did you get beat? Do you remember that?
You know, I remember, like, I had a no-hitter going last inning. And we had just hit a ball in the top of the seventh. And the guy made a great catch. And I'm playing for A&M, made a great catch, double off our guys on the bases. And I come up with somebody got on an error, and then I threw a pitch, and the guy hit a ball down the right field line. And unfortunately, we couldn't get to it with two outs, and they scored the winning run. And it was a one-hitter, and we got beat 1-0.
That was in the semis?
The semifinals, yeah, in Austin.
Okay. How long did you play at Texas?
I was there 4 years. I went to school where I wasn't really ready for. Like I said, I grew up really poor in South Texas, and I go to University of Texas, 40,000 students, and walk in there with one suitcase, blue jeans and T-shirts, and no suits, no jackets, no ties, no nothing, and it took me maybe 2 or 3 years just to get used to being where I was at. And, you know, in Texas, they send you out in the summer to go play baseball. So I went to South Dakota for 2 years and pitched in South Dakota. And my catcher there in South Dakota for 2 years was a guy named John Bad Dude Stearns. So that's where I met Stearnsy at. And I did real well. I did real well in summer, but I really never really pitched real well at Texas, even though I never lost a game there.
This is Stearns, the major league catcher?
Yes.
For the Mets?
Yes. The manager for Harrisburg,
right,
too. Yeah, we end up playing together 2 summers. Yes, sir. Yes.
And he was a key, you think?
Well, you know what? No, I always felt like I could pitch. For some reason, when I was at the University of Texas, I always put too much pressure on myself. I didn't understand things very well. I ended up being the MVP of the state of Texas. And I was 5'9", weighed 150 pounds out of high school. The guy that won it before me, 2 years before me, was a guy named Bert Hooten. And Bert Hooten was at the University of Texas. So I was supposed to be number two starter behind Bert Hooten when I was a freshman. You know, a freshman didn't play very much, but I was supposed to be number two guy. And I never really handled it very well. You know, there was too much pressure, and I didn't know how to handle it. But you know, winning the MVP of the state of Texas is probably the biggest honor I've ever had.
That's as a high school senior?
As a high school senior. I mean, all the levels, all four levels over there, I was the best player named in the state of Texas.
It must have been, Bobby, it must have been, I mean, how big is Alice? Is it like?
About 18,000, maybe 20,000. It fluctuates depending on the oil and stuff like that. About 20,000 people probably. Okay.
So even back then it was that size?
Yes.
Okay. So now you go to University of Texas, mm-hmm. which is what, 50,000 people?
It was 40,000 students. Okay. So it was 40,000 students, and I was pretty lost. I was pretty much lost. You know, it was a situation where I was supposed to go down to Pan American University in Edinburgh. But unfortunately, something happened there where the offer was not the same as the University of Texas. And, you know, I got a full ride, and I got everything there, you know, from University of Texas. So, you know, I didn't know where I was going, honestly. I didn't know a thing about Texas, not one thing. And I took the scholarship, and with the friends I made and the people I met and the things I got to do, it probably was the right decision.
But Texas found you. You were drafted.
Well, you know what? I was drafted in the, I think, 30th round or whatever. It's one of those deals where they draft you and they go, here's $1,000. You want to play or not? And like I told you before, I told my dad, here I go. And, you know, I went and pitched that summer a little bit, then came back next year and worked myself up through, went to a co-op, in fact. I was in the co-op in Lynchburg, Virginia, made the All-Star team. Next year I played in Double-A, made the All-Star team. And my third full year in pro ball, I was in the big leagues at the end of the year.
That impressed me, the fact that you were moving up a step at a time. You couldn't...
Well, you know, it was, you know, sometimes you have something given to you. And for some reason, I've always had a knack of understanding what's going on around me as far as the baseball field. And, you know, you learn through things that you watch. As I try to teach the ball players now, you got to watch a baseball game to learn. I mean, you can sit there and do a little and not watch a baseball game, you won't learn anything, even though you're playing in it. And some way or other, I had a talent since I was little. Even Little League, when I was 12 years old, I ran the team. In high school, I ran the team. You know, I told everybody what to do, and for some reason, it's something that was given to me. I was blessed with it all my life. I enjoyed baseball, and right now, I'm trying to teach and parlay some of that stuff I learned through these young men I got here.
Was baseball? You know, football is famous
in Texas. Oh, yeah.
You know, it was baseball the same thing? Did it have the same? Does it have the same emphasis? It certainly does at the University of Texas, but when you get down to places like Alice.
Well, Alice was football, big time. I mean, Alice had never won district in baseball. And I played football, too. My senior year in high school, I was a quarterback on the football team. I ended up being the quarterback after people got hurt because I wouldn't quit. And I was a third stringer. Two guys got hurt. I became the starter. And... No, baseball was everything. I mean, they had good baseball players, but they never put emphasis on baseball, and they never won. So my junior year, we ended up winning district for the first time in the history of the school, and my senior year, we went all the way to state. So we kind of started a little tradition, and, you know, fortunately, we had a baseball coach that year who liked baseball, and even though he was a football coach, he helped us a lot. But, you know, those are the only two district championships that school has ever won.
Does that, when you're looking back, that the baseball coach at Alice, how important was he?
He was very important in the sense that he was a baseball player, and he was he wasn't much older than we were. He was young. He just started coaching himself 3 or 4 years into it, and you know, he tried to teach us how to play, but he kept us together real well, and you know, he gave us the opportunity to play. And. And like I said, we grew with him, and you know, it was what the thing that helped us a lot was in a little town like that, you end up playing with or against the same guys you're with all the time. And by the time I was senior, we had at least 8 out of 9 guys that played every day had played against each other together all our lives, and we knew each other real well.
What was his name?
Coach Ray Contreras. Ray Contreras. He ended up being coaching a couple more years, became an administrator in small towns, became an AD in small towns, and a principal and all that good stuff.
Some of the managers you had on the way up, was there one that stood out, Bobby?
Well, you know, as far as managing and stuff like that, when I was a player, I really never really had one that really stood out to help me. When I became a major league pitching coach, you know, I worked for Lou Piniella 1 year or 2 years, but then I went with Felipe Lou for 3.5 years. And the influence that Felipe Lou had on me as far as teaching and learning the game was probably one of the most important things I ever had.
Okay, but those 4 years getting to the majors, it wasn't...
No, not really. No, there wasn't really. We were basically on our own back then. You know, you know, Rich Donnelly was my manager for a couple of years, but Wayne Twilliger was my manager in A-ball. Mr. Marty Martinez, I guess, passed away last year, was my manager in AA. But even at that time, I had a sense of what was going on. And back then, we did mostly you did what you had to do to get by and what you were doing.
It's must be considerably different. Minor leagues then and now.
Oh, well, it's computers, pictures, a film, instructors, you name it, travel. I mean, travel's so much different than it is now. I mean, you have so much information right now. You can go in there and see videos right now of people right now. You can get on the computer and get information on the pitchers pitching today. You get information on players, you know, where they hit, who they hit better, left or right. If you want information, it's there. If you want to use it, it's there. And, you know, people sometimes, I don't think, use it enough. In the minor leagues, I know in the big leagues when I was there, I learned how to break down video really well. I learned how to, you know, look at stats really well to see what you were going to do as a pitching coach and understand what's going on around you, who's hot, who's not, and all the information highway you have right now, people should use.
There was some, can you remember a particular bus trip that was really long?
Oh, man, well, I played in Texas League, and I played in San Antonio, so that was the farthest city south. So we'd go, you talk about the Shreveport, Louisiana. We go to in Arkansas. Where AA was in Arkansas, I can't remember. But you go from Louisiana to El Paso. And we're talking 14, 15 hours on a bus. And then, you know, get another bus. And you go from there all the way to El Paso, from Louisiana to El Paso. We're talking 14, 15 hours on the bus. And, you know, and again, the buses weren't like they are now. I mean, you're talking about not very good buses, but that's the way it was, and that's the way, you know, that's the way you learn to travel.
You told me earlier this year about lighting fires in the bullpen.
Oh, yeah, that's the way you stayed warm back then. I mean, we didn't have heaters. We didn't have anything like that. I still remember my first year, my first game in 75 in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, my first full year in A-ball. I mean, it was very, very cold. And there was a trash can out there, and we lit a fire because that's the only way we could stay warm. And, you know, back then, you don't have all the rules of pollution and all this stuff back then. You just stayed warm. I mean, you didn't have anything. You didn't have jacket. You didn't have shoes. It's like right now, you know, you have all kinds of shoes. Back then, you put on your cleats, your Rydells or whatever you had, and that's what you wore all day. Now you got running shoes. You got turf shoes. You got all kinds of shoes. Back then, you put on your cleats, and that's what you wore all day long.
What were the uniforms like?
They weren't that bad. And now in college, they were all cotton. You know, they were warm. South Texas, you think about Texas and warm, you talk about, oh, man, those things itch. But once you started playing ball, the uniforms, all different kinds of uniforms came into play. But at Texas, they were hot. Hot.
But they weren't, at your juncture, they weren't like the old wool ones.
No, yes. My first year there in Texas, really? They were, yeah. Then we started going to the polyester and all that stuff, you know. But my first year, they were wool.
You were like a Texas boy here. You're drafted by Texas.
I played for Texas.
And you wind up in Texas.
Yeah, I was drafted by Texas. I went to the University of Texas. I played for the Texas Rangers. And then in what was it, 2000, 2001, I ended up being the bullpen coach and the pitching coach for the Texas Rangers.
Okay.
So, as I tell you right now, I don't know why, but as I tell these players here, there's a reason I'm here. And there's always reasons for things, okay? And I keep telling people, you know, it's kind of like a storybook deal, but I'm here for a reason, whether it's to help one person or just to be in New Britain. You know, I use those things as things to help people out.
You, was the quest to get back to the majors after the...
Never. I never, you know, I tell you this in all honesty. Once I finished playing, I really didn't have much else to do.
No, but I mean, after you, that 1 year when they sent you down early in spring training.
That, well, you always tried to get back. I mean, but it wasn't, you know, you tried to get back the best way you knew how. You know, unfortunately, I hurt my arm and stuff like that. And then I got traded to Cleveland, and I had a hurt arm, and I pitched a little bit that year. And then next year, I had a real good year. But unfortunately, the rules were different back then than they are now, where they use your time so the big leagues counted. You know, you can only go up once because you use your whatever it's called right now. I can't remember. But nowadays, you can go up four, five, six, seven, whatever times you want. But back then, you went up, you used it. If you used them up, you were a free agent or whatever. And my second year with Cleveland, I was doing really well in AAA, but they didn't want to call me up. And but there was always a wannabe, but I don't think it was a life and death situation for me.
You got to tell me about the Mexican League.
I didn't have very much fun in the Mexican League. You know what happened was I was Cleveland for last year in 81, and you know, you get to the age where you're just kind of being used because they have younger prospects coming up. And you know, I started a game one day. I'd been in the bullpen, and all of a sudden I had to start and threw 125, 130 pitches in 7-something innings because I was the only guy we had. So you did what you had to do, which you don't do now anymore. And unfortunately, I didn't really want to play in the States anymore, and I told that to Cleveland, so they sold me to Nuevo Laredo, which is 100 miles from home, and I played there. I didn't really enjoy it very much. Even though I spoke Spanish and everything, the bus rides were real long. The buses were terrible. I didn't enjoy the league very much, and that was the last year I played, which was in 1982.
What was the longest ride?
Oh, I couldn't tell you, but let me put it this way. No air conditioner, no restroom in the buses, okay? So, you know, you got on the bus and you traveled from Nuevo Laredo all over Mexico, and you know, you just, and every place, every country, every state you cross, you had to stop and get checked by people, and you had to get off. You know, everybody had their own little deals they needed, and you got off a bus, got on a bus, and kept on traveling all night.
So it's, that league is, has all the romance and lack of romance people.
Well, it's not the same anymore, you know. I mean, this is like everything else. The buses are better, probably the travel's better. They probably fly some people around instead of getting on buses. You know, but it was an experience that, that, as I said before, I'll never say never, that I'll never go back to Mexico, but it was something that taught me a lesson about how good it really was in the States when you really played.
How long before now, you, after 81, do you start coaching right away?
Well, I played in 82, and I hurt my arm one more time, which was about the fourth time I'd hurt my arm. And I told my wife, I said, I just can't pitch anymore. I don't want to go through this anymore. And unfortunately, they would not release me. And fortunately for me, they called me up. I called them, and they told me, you know what, we're going to release you, but you can't play in the States because they still own my, you know, my rights. And I said, that's fine. So as soon as they released me, I called Seattle, and I knew a man in Seattle named Rene Latchman, who I had played for in Puerto Rico in winter ball, and I asked him if they had a job. Seattle had a job open, and fortunately for me, the farm director was Hal Keller, who drafted me in Texas. So he called me, he said, Bobby, you want to come work? You're not going to make any money. If you want a job, get on a plane tomorrow, and you'll be an A-ball pitching coach in Bakersfield, California. And I said yes, and that was 1983.
And you have been somewhere since.
I've been everywhere since. In fact, I was an A-ball in 83 as a pitching coach, and the very next year, For some reason, as I tell you, I don't know why, I was a AAA pitching coach after 1 year. And I was a AAA pitching coach for 84 and 85. And you tell me how I got from A-ball to AAA in 1 year, I can't tell you. But those are the things that happened to me.
When they write bios, they always point out the people you had as a pitching coach. Pedro Owen.
Johan.
And
Francisco Liriano.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How much really does a pitching coach have to do with these guys?
Not as much as people think. I think the most important thing is the confidence level you have with them, the relationship you form with them. Pedro was really tough. Pedro was really, really tough. You know, Pedro's history was he was a mean person. On the mound, he got things done the way he knew how. It didn't matter how he got it done. Pedro was the toughest in the sense that, you know, it was hard to get into his little house. If he didn't like you, he didn't get in there. And I didn't know who Pedro was at all when I went over there. I had no idea. And Randy Johnson, the same thing in Seattle when he won his first Cy Young, I was a pitching coach. When Pedro won his first Cy Young, I was a pitching coach. But Pedro was the toughest one. And we got to know each other in a sense one day on the mound. He'd always stand at the bottom of the mound. And one day on the mound, after he'd started 6 or 7 games, I said, Pedro, I said, I respect you tremendously. When I come out here, I'd really appreciate it if you get up on top of the mound because my respect for you is mutual. And it really doesn't look good. And I'm talking in Spanish the whole time. And he took his 1 or 2 steps up toward the mound. I said, well, that's good enough for me right now. And, one of the greatest competitors for a young, small person that he was I've ever met.
This is Martinez.
This is Martinez, yes.
Randy Johnson?
Randy Johnson.
Here's nasty.
Randy Johnson was a different type of person. Randy and I probably didn't have a good relationship in the sense that we talked, but we communicated when we had to. And, here's a guy that had his routine, worked as hard as anybody you've ever seen in a weight room. And through all the time that I was with him for the year and a half, because he got hurt the second year. You know, this is another great competitor, as I tell everybody. Those pitchers that are Cy Young Award winners, that are pitched for a long time, they have that competitive knack in them. Their ability to overcome things and situations is something you don't teach. It's just, you know, God-given talent, in my opinion. But he was a different kind of competitor, too.
And Johan?
Johan was the nicest one of all. The thing about Johan, and I didn't know him either, is that...
This is the minors.
This is the minors. I only had him for a month and a half, but, you know, Johan had been sitting in the big leagues for a couple of years after they took him a Rule 5 draft. And he was still real young, hadn't pitched that much. And when he came to AAA, they really wanted him working command on his changeup quite a bit. And I'd catch him. I'd catch him a lot myself and call pitches, and we'd work. And, and I'd tell him, the changeup, just throw the changeup. You know, I don't care if you throw it 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in a row. You need to develop your changeup as much as you can. I don't care when you throw it or how you throw it. And, you know, I stayed after him. I tried to teach him as much as I could about pitching, when to throw pitches and stuff like that. But he was such a great competitor and a great athlete and just the type of guy you want on a team that was a team player. And you can see it right now, too. Everybody goes to Johan because he has that aura of being the team player and pulling for the team and treating everybody on the team the same, whether you're the number one guy on the team or the 25th guy on the team.
Was there one pitcher that was really difficult for you as a coach?
Well, there's quite a few that are difficult. I mean, you know, Randy was difficult in the sense that it was sometimes hard to communicate with him. Pedro was difficult in the sense that you had to get to know him first, and it took a while. You know, but there's always been guys in the minor leagues that you kind of find, you know, tough to get to or tough to make them understand what you want them to do. But, you know, after a while, they either do or they don't. And, you know, you wish them well. And, you know, in this game that I've been in like 35 years, once it gets personal, it's no good. And I could probably tell you that in 35 years of doing this game, there ain't too many people I got personal with, more professional than anything else.
Where did you... was just where you come from, Bobby? Is that part of learning Spanish?
I grew up speaking Spanish. That's
really?
That was my first language, yes. I had to learn to talk like this when I went to the University of Texas, though. You know, but as I grew up, I had an accent, and I, you know, I had difficulty speaking. And the thing about it, I was a decent student, stuff like that. But you learn to adjust.